and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Neuland Laboratories Limited Q3 FY23 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ravi Udeshi from Ernst & Young. Thank you, and over to you.
Thank you, Yashashree. Good evening, friends. We welcome you to the Q3 FY23 earnings call of Neuland Laboratories Limited. To take us through the results and to answer your questions, we have with us the top management from Neuland, represented by Mr. Sujit Davuluri, Vice Chairman and CEO, Mr. Saharsh Davuluri, Vice Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. Abhijit Majumdar, CFO, and Mr. Sajeev Emmanuel Medikonda, Head Corporate Planning and Strategy. We will start the call with a brief overview of the financials by Abhijit Majumdar, and then Saharsh will give you a broad highlight of the business trends and what he is observing in the market, and post this, we will open it up for the Q&A session. As usual, the standard safe harbor clause applies as we start the call. With that said, I now hand over the floor to Abhijit. Over to you, Abhijit.
Thank you very much, Ravi, and a very good evening to all friends and a warm welcome to you all for joining our Q3 FY23 earnings call. I think you must have seen the presentation which Ravi mentioned, and it is put up on our website and has been uploaded on the BSE and NSE websites. As always, any comments on the content of this presentation which we have sent will be highly appreciated, and we'll do our best to give out additional data points which will help you to understand our business better. I will briefly talk about financials now. The total income for this quarter is 270 odd crores against 238.4 crores in Q3 FY22. This was largely driven by a growth in our GDS business. Our EBITDA for the quarter stands at 54.9 crores with an EBITDA margin of 20.3%, an increase of 6% or 600 basis points over the previous year. The increase in EBITDA margin has been led by a revenue shift margin towards high margin products. While we have continued to witness volatility in input prices, however, in line with Q2, FY23, we continue to experience some easing on a relative basis. Our focus on execution excellence and cost has enabled us to minimize the cost impact from raw material increases facing our industries. At the same time, we have seen a sequential drop in revenue by 8% when compared to Q2 FY23 and an EBITDA margin drop of 330 bps due to a slight change in business mix as well as lower revenues impacting our operating leverage. I would request you to measure our performance over a one-year time horizon as our EBITDA margins will fluctuate on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Coming to specifics, our gross margin was 55.2% in Q3 compared to 49.2% in Q3 FY22 and 56.2% in Q2 FY23. Profit after tax was at 30.4 crores as compared to 12.7 crores last year. This quarter's EPS is at ₹23.7 per share. On a nine-month basis, the total income is 785.8 crores, an increase of 12.3% over the prior period of last year. The EBITDA increased by 46.1% to 153.3 crores as against 104.9 crores in the nine-month FY22. The EBITDA margins has come in at 19.5% compared to 15% for 9 months FY22 on account of our stated shift to higher margin products. We generated a free cash flow of 161 crores in the 9 months of FY23. Our net debt position stands reduced to 72 crores versus 212 crores as at the end of March 22. We continue to invest in upgrading our facilities and have invested INR 50.9 crores in capex during this period. Our net gearing ratio stands at 0.1x as on December 2023. With that, I would like to hand over the call to Saharsh for his remarks. And once again, thank you very much.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Thank you, Abhijit. I think in terms of the quarter itself, I'll add a few comments on top of what Abhijit has already said, and then we can open it up for Q&A. The quarter, in many ways, is a fairly decent representation of the direction that we have been steering our business. While there is uncertainty surrounding raw material prices, we are starting to see some stability. In my opinion, this quarter continues to indicate that our strategy of focusing on the GDS specialty and the CMS business is shaping up well. The growth driven by both the specialty and the commercial products in the CMS business has meant that we have healthy gross margins flowing through to the rest of the P&L. In the specialty segments, products like Apixaban and Azithromycin have contributed significantly, and we are excited about these products. With regards to the CMS business, I would like to highlight the significant jump in revenues from commercial products. You may recall that over the past few years, we had stressed that our molecules will gradually transition from development to commercial, and this quarter marks such a transition. We expect further commercialization to happen over the medium to long term. The contribution of the CMS business has been a significant driver of the improved EBITDA margins that we have witnessed in the last two quarters. We continue to see some early stage projects get added to the business this quarter, and we are continuing to see an increased traction from new customers as our ability to execute complex late stage projects that distinguishes us and makes us a highly regarded CDMO. In terms of the overall business, we are witnessing a shift towards high margin business, which has been our stated goal, but we continue to remain slightly cautious about how the business or even product mix, raw material prices or forex could negatively impact these margins in the future. I think that this is something that we would like investors, analysts and all stakeholders to be mindful of. I'd further like to mention that our Unit 3 operations continue to ramp up, which has contributed to growth that you have recently witnessed. Some of our late-stage products are being scaled up here. Hence, we foresee Unit 3 utilization continuing to move up. As I had alluded earlier, we have a good visibility on the CMS business flow in terms of higher value projects over the short to medium term. And we expect these factors will contribute to our margin increase in the future as well. In order to keep up with the requirements of our customers, we will add new production blocks in Unit 3 and invest in R&D infrastructure to facilitate their goals over time. As always, I would like to state that the very nature of Neuland's business in terms of working on high-quality complex molecules is such that revenues and margins could be lumpy on a quarter-to-quarter basis. But as Abhijit just now emphasized, on an annual basis, they are steadily moving upwards, and you could expect the same going forward. We think that the recent momentum is sustainable over long term, and therefore we continue to remain excited about the future of the business. So maybe I think I'll pause here and open it up for Q&A.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have our first question from the line of B. Suresh from Buram's Financials. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, we Hello. Can hear you.
Hello.
We can Hello. Hear you, sir. Please go ahead with your question.
Hello. Hello, madam. Is here? Hello.
Yes, Mr. Suresh.
Hello. Hello, madam.
Yes, we can hear Hello. You.
Sir, Newland last time property one time sale, that amount is not taken the balance sheet. Hello? Hello?
So hold on, please.
Sorry, you're not able to follow the question. Maybe
Mr. Suresh?
Maybe you can join back in the Q&A again or just write it in the chat box.
Hello? Hear me? Hello?
Mr. Suresh, please check your net. Can you redial in, please? Okay. Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Sajal Kapoor, an independent investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my questions. I have a small acknowledgement to start with. So I've been tracking Newland Labs for almost two decades now, and I must say that our balance sheet and cash flows have never been stronger than what we have today. So well done, team, and a warm welcome to our new CFO, Mr. Abhijit Majumdar. I have two questions. So let's assume a hypothetical scenario where you know, your competitor is a privately held and unlisted entity operating in the area of innovator synthesis and NC scale-up as a service model. I guess they will have much more freedom to plan strategic objectives and execute them, as there will be, you know, a limited number of shareholders in a privately held business, and these shareholders are also much more educated and much more aware of the business economics in terms of upfront capital deployment, long gestation window, lumpiness in cash flows, etc., compared to being a listed entity like Newland Labs, where analysts and other shareholders are usually very impatient and short-term oriented and look one quarter at a time in a business that is fundamentally has very long cycle times, like 7, 8, or even 10 years, with upfront capital deployment in infrastructure, R&D, scientific talent, etc. So which of these two companies is better placed in your view, the listed one or the unlisted one? That's my first question.
Yeah, I think it's thanks for sharing your observations. I think from the way we look at our business, while there is challenges in you know, the quarter on quarter you know, smoothness of the business, I think as CDMOs reach a certain size, and I think for Newland, our CMS business has been fairly small compared to our overall revenues. I think now it's closer to 35-40% of our total revenues. But I think as we keep scaling up the business, we think that some of these volatilities can be managed. And I think as going forward also, as the business keeps growing, we should be able to provide a certain, you know, a certain runway of growth and performance. But it would be very difficult to demonstrate that on a quarter-to-quarter basis. And I think ultimately, investors will have to decide whether this is the kind of business that they would be interested in. But I think I do believe that as a listed company, you can have, you know, lumpiness in your business model. And as long as the business is profitable and has sustainable growth, I think being a listed company does not really create any kind of a challenges being in the CDMO business.
Yeah. No, I would agree completely with what I said, Sajal. It all depends on the specific organization rather than whether they're listed or unlisted. And therefore, as a company, if you notice our investor calls over the last several quarters, we've always said that please do not expect consistency on a quarter-to-quarter basis, because that's not how our business operates or a business life cycle operates. However, we've stated what our expectations from the business are in terms of product mix as well as margins over the long term. So I think as long as the company is transparent, I think from shareholders and people like yourself, we've always been understood and given that leeway.
That's helpful, Sujit, and thank you, Saharsh, as well. So second question is on, you know, the private equity money that has been chasing API and generic CMO assets in India in recent years, whether it is Carlyle Group or any other PE for that matter, they all are sitting on losses after almost 3 years, and these guys typically invest for about 5 years, right? So question really is on the economics of the generic pharma stroke API businesses. I mean, is this not an investment worthy sector, and private equity has got it wrong, or you think they overestimated the growth runway and the cyclicality which is inherent in any generic business with pricing pressure on one end and raw material challenges on the supply side, both availability and the pricing of raw material, and the pricing pressure, of course, on the product side. So how would you read it as an industry participant, this obsession of private equity running after API assets and not being able to make any decent gains? I mean, all of them, as far as I know, are sitting on losses. So what do you think it means for the industry and more importantly for Newland Labs? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Sajal. I think we're, you know, quite well aware of the private equity activity in the API space. And I think obviously, you know, while we are aware of what's going on, it's hard for us to comment on what their specific strategy, financial goals, or, you know, exit plans are. I think what you understand about the business is that, you know, every API company is having a different strategy. You know, some companies are going after, CRAMs of big pharma. Some companies are going after, you know, biotech companies. Some companies are more focused on generic APIs. And every business has its own, you know, dynamics in terms of margin profile, growth, challenges, etc. So I think the way we are looking at it from Newland's perspective is the kind of businesses that we are focusing on, which is the specialty APIs as well as the CMS business, I think these require a very high level of attention to the customer needs in terms of what needs to be done for their drug, whether it is, you know, phase-appropriate development, setting up the right kind of infrastructure, and providing them a partnership for a 5 to 10 year runway. And I think that's an area where we feel that we are very well calibrated, as, you know, I think both culturally, organizationally, to do that. And in that space, you know, when we are going through that journey, we don't necessarily see competitors around us, I think, because it's a very large space, right? It's a $50, $60 billion space, the CDMO space that we operate in. We are too small a player, or no one is big enough to really, you know, elbow the other out. And therefore, I think while we, you know, keenly observe what's happening, we would find it very difficult to comment on, you know, what the rationale is. But I think as far as our business is concerned, we're not really seeing any direct threat or concerns coming out from these private equity backed organizations.
Mr. Raja?
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Sarosh, and congrats on the great set of numbers. I just have two questions. My first question is that if I were to compare your gross margins to any of the other API players right now, even if I compare it to Divi's, like right now you're sitting at the highest gross margins within the API space in India, at least on the listed space. I just want to understand, like, what are you doing so differently here? Like, because I think you have large portion of your business coming from generic APIs also. While if I see Divi's, they have roughly 50% of their revenues coming from custom synthesis. But still, your gross margins are higher than them. Could you just give some color on that for my benefit? I also want to understand, are there any particular products where you are really enjoying high realizations at the moment and you feel that going forward they might not be sustainable? That's my first question.
Yeah, I think, Rajat, what we've shared in terms of our remarks about the quarter, I think it's a general representation of the trend going forward. I think, yes, we also did see some challenges on raw materials. But as you know, I had mentioned in my remarks, it has softened a little bit. It's not as severe as it was, say, 3 or 4 quarters ago. I think some of these raw materials, like these lithium metal-based prices, are still high, but solvents and all have softened. Again, you know, I think the gross margins are also, you know, a direct factor of the business mix and the product mix that we have. And maybe because of the mix that we have this kind of margin. But again, you know, we are very clear that it's not a one-time exceptionally high gross margin. We think that this is, you know, a reasonable margin that we think is sustainable, provided, you know, there's no major shift in terms of, you know, raw material supply situations or foreign exchange fluctuations and things like that. But I would not really know why, you know, the other players' margins have maybe, you know, again, because the businesses are so diverse within the API space, it's just maybe the challenges that they're facing for their specific products. I think also another point to note is Prime is has been relatively smaller compared to how big it used to be for us in the past. And Prime is definitely a segment where we have some pricing challenges maybe few issues on raw materials, but I think we don't see any other challenges other than what we had mentioned.
Sure. Tarush, could you also tell me, like, how much backward integrated are you at the moment? Like, what percentage of your raw material is imported from China? Could you give some color there?
So your question is about how backward integrated are we?
Yeah, how much? So it's a very product-specific strategy, isn't it? So we don't have an overall umbrella strategy that for every product we have to be backward integrated, because it doesn't make sense. So we do a product by product evaluation, and for some products we are fully backward integrated. For some products, given the supply situation, we're not backward integrated. Therefore, we could not give you an overall percentage number. Today, our procurement from China, I would say, is in the range of about 25% or so, though our dependence on China is far less than that, but those are the rough numbers.
Got it. And would it also be possible for you to break down this 24% growth which you have reported in the GDS segment in terms of price and volumes? Would that be possible?
We would prefer to keep the growth numbers to what we have shared. We will not be able to provide further.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Ayush. That's it from us.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Ankush Mahajan from Axis Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. thanks for the opportunity. And, sir, congrats for good set of numbers. Sir, my question is that in the API segment at this time, the whole industry is talking about the less export, and prices are falling for the APIs. Even the peers are they are also saying the same things on the con call. So, would you throw some light, sir? How do you see our company in regarding to it, that what about the price realizations for the APIs? That's the first part. Second, sir, what about the capacity utilization of the new plants, and how do you see the capacity utilization in the current quarter, that's a Q4?
So, Ankush, on the pricing side, we've mentioned this in previous calls, but over the last decade or so, we've consistently de-risked our procurement positions from China to other suppliers. So we've made the supply chain much closer to home, and therefore, as far as our solvents or raw materials are concerned, we are seeing volatility, but it is not extreme volatility as we see reflected in our performance numbers as well. Coming to your second part, I think our unit one and unit two, the capacity utilization tends to range between 80% to 85%, given that specific quarter in the product mix. Our unit three is about 65% based on the installed capacity today. But given that our unit three is growing and we continue to add capacity, that number will keep evolving.
So, sir, unit one, unit two, 85%, and unit three, 65% currently.
Okay. I said 80 plus minus.
Okay. So, would you throw some more light on the CMS business, how the commercial and development stage they could do in upcoming quarters?
I think as I had indicated earlier, there has been, you know, good progress in terms of commercialization of certain CMS molecules. I think the increase in the commercial revenues this quarter is an indication of that. Going forward, we expect over the, you know, several quarters in the next couple of years maybe that more molecules will get commercialized. And we are actually very excited about the potential of these molecules. And as these molecules get commercialized and the ones that just recently got commercialized also scale up, we think that will be a key driver for the CMS business. I think, if you go back to our con calls 2 years ago, we had indicated that, you know, we have a pipeline of several molecules which are, you know, either completing phase three, early part of commercialization. These molecules are all kind of, you know, still around, and, maybe two have become commercial since then. I think if you look at our tables that we disclose, that number is evident. And I think in the next 1 to 2 years, we expect maybe a couple more to get commercial. The number may be really small, but these are high potential molecules, so I think we are excited about them. The only caveat I would add is because these are new drugs, there's always a risk that, you know, the drug may not get approved, or, you know, there's also a risk that, you know, the drug may not be successful. So therefore, we are, you know, still very cautious. But I think if you look at the last, you know, several quarters trend, it should give you some indication that, you know, things are looking positive from a CMS commercialization revenues point. So I think that's what we can share at this point.
And even so, we see in the CMS business that from the last two quarters doing very well. So some kind of a growth, sir, any growth number that we can put some on the CMS side?
We won't be able to give any sort of guidance, but I think all we have been confident to say is that whatever numbers we are seeing and whatever kind of trajectory we are seeing is a sustainable one. So there's nothing like an exceptional quarter that has happened and we will, you know, go back to how we were, like, say, 3-4 quarters ago. But I think beyond that, it's very difficult for us to give any guidance.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to answer queries from all participants, kindly restrict your questions to two at a time. We have a next question from the line of Nikhil from SIMPL. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah. Hi. Congratulations on great set of numbers. And I think I'll add to a previous participant's point that we've never seen the balance sheet of Newland being so strong in terms of debt and cash flows. So great work on the efforts which the management has been making. I think now results are clearly visible. Just two questions. One is, Saharsh, if I look at our product mix breakup between prime and specialty and compare it year on year, so last year it was around 56, which is now 61, prime and specialty both. While if we look at the industry across most API commentary, people have been complaining about high inventory levels, and as a result, there is a major inventory destocking which is happening, and the demand has been hit, and also the pricing has been hit. But our numbers seem to be very different from what the industry across players, what we are looking at. So if you can just help us understand what's different is happening in our set of custom products, because the prime and specialty mix has only improved. where there should have been more inventory issues, which the industry is talking about, but our numbers belie that thing. So just help us understand on these two segments.
So, Nikhil, I think there are two elements here. When it comes to our specialty business, I think that we both have driven by molecule.
You're sounding muffled.
Yeah. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, yes. Please go ahead.
Yeah. When it comes to our specialty business, I think the growth is being driven and the numbers are a reflection of some of the molecules which are in the pipeline where our customers are taking quantities for launch. And as we have mentioned, molecules like apixaban and paliperidone have driven some of the revenues and the growth there. And also we have had other specialty molecules like donepezil, ezetimibe, too, which have contributed. And I think even as you see that there's an industry trend, I think for these specific a part of the cycle where I think there is a continuous growth and also customers are looking at launch, which is why you are seeing that reflection in the numbers. And when it comes to Prime, I think again it is products like mirtazapine and a few others which are contributing consistently to the revenues. And it is, in our case, we have a lot of molecules which are say around 100 to 200 ton medium in terms of their molecule size when it comes to tonnage, where there haven't been fortunately so many inventory issues because the buildup is likely to be lower in the medium size kind of volume products. So that is the reason why we are seeing a certain consistency in the last two quarters from these segments.
Okay, thanks for the detailed explanation. Just one last question on the CMS side. Now, if we go to slide number 15, what we see is that the commercial launch has scaled up. So for last four quarters, we were averaging around between 40 to 50 crores. And this quarter, we moved to almost 75 crores. So which means there is a big commercial launch either which has happened or we've participated. So do you see, because what we understand in the patented molecules, buyers take up large volumes and then it stays for some time and then it reduces to a normal level till the time the next quantum is required for a larger launch or based on the demand. So this 74, 75 crore is sustainable, or do you think we'll come back to that 40, 50 crore kind of a run rate? So is it supported by a launch of a molecule which has driven this?
The short answer is that it's sustainable because I think what you are alluding to is typically how a launch happens. But every case is very different. Sometimes you get to, you are commercializing a drug that is already in the market as a second source, in which case you will probably start supplying continuously from the beginning. In some cases, there could be a situation where you will make, maybe 3-4 months or 3-4 quarters of launch quantities, and then you'll go into maybe hibernation for a year or so. So I think it's possible, different scenarios are possible, but I think the question that I'm guessing you want to know is this a one-time thing or is it sustainable? I think the short answer to that is it is sustainable.
Okay, fine. Thanks. I'll come back to that.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Sanjaya Satapati from Ampersand. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so thanks a lot. I just want to ask a couple of questions. The your specialty business contribution declined in this quarter. If you can just explain that. And secondly, though you have already warned that your numbers will be volatile because of the nature of business, but your commentary nowadays is far more confident than what you used to do in previous year. So what has really changed, if you can just explain us?
So we are unable to hear you.
Yeah. So if we to look at the specialty segment, I think we again, because the molecules themselves are small volume in terms of their nature, so there is likelihood to be more lumpiness, because even customers' campaigns and all are not done on a regular basis, but are done more on a make-to-stock or on a not on a make-to-stock, but on a make-to-order, and in certain markets based on how the demand phases out over a period of time. So therefore, there's likely to be a certain lumpiness. But if you have to look at it over a annual period, we can see that there has been a significant growth even in the specialty business, and which is very clear both in the percentage from the specialty business, and even it is reflected even in our margins too. So it is just, there is likely to be a certain lumpiness because of the nature of the molecules, but overall we are seeing an upward trend.
Thanks, and if you can just tell us about that will your numbers be less volatile and kind of a secular, relatively secular compared to what the turbulence that you saw in the previous years? Have you kind of reached a stage where you can be a lot more sure about your prospects, primarily because your new molecules are in a more better commercial stage?
Are you referring to the specialty business in particular or the overall business?
I'm talking about the CNS business now.
The CNS business. I think, yes, as we had indicated a couple of times in this call, the CMS business, the shift to commercialization is giving us more confidence that this business is sustainable and it's more sticky. And I think you should see, you know, continued performance going forward. I think depending on the order mix, there could be, you know, variation in terms of margins and numbers, etc. But I think overall, you know, what we are emphasizing is if it's commercial revenue, you can see that it will be sustainable. Maybe with a little bit of lumpiness, but it will be sustainable for sure.
Understood. And lastly, on Unit 3, can you just tell us like where, what kind of utilization now and what kind of utilization we are looking forward to in the next couple of years?
So if you look at, I think so Suchit has mentioned that Unit 3 utilization in FY23 estimate is around 62 to 65%. As we move forward into FY24 with the product mix change, we would be closer to 68-69%, and so kind of tells you there's a window of growth that would come from our industry in the future year, next 2 years.
Understood. Thanks a lot, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Gautam Bahal from Morgan Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Just a quick one on Unit 3. Has the US FDA approval come through there, or if not, what is the update there, please?
Yes, so we have products that we are shipping into the U.S. from Unit 3. So we've had virtual audits by the FDA. We haven't had a physical inspection yet, but the site is listed in the FDA database as an inspected site for the U.S. market.
Is there any sort of clarification of when that physical inspection will happen? Like, it's been triggered already, right?
See, right now, the FDA determines when the physical inspection happens. Right now, as far as we are concerned, we haven't seen any approvals from Unit 3 being held up because of a lack of a physical inspection. Therefore, it's the complete prerogative of the agency to schedule an inspection.
Okay. But, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. At the moment, you are not making any novel stuff from Unit 3, right? It's mostly the generic that is being manufactured there. You're waiting for
We are making NCEs from Unit 3 along with generics. And I think what Suchet said applies to both. because the way the FDA has been functioning, especially post-COVID, is if they are not seeing any broad-based challenges with an organization, they are approving specific filings with online inspections. They are not necessarily holding back approvals for a physical inspection. So therefore, you know, our product is getting consumed or will get consumed in the US markets without any physical inspections, yes, both for NCEs and generics.
Yes, and that's the current state of affairs, but as you know, things keep changing. It's a dynamic landscape.
Yeah, they may come for a physical inspection, which we are ready and welcome at any time.
Okay, but Unit 3 at the moment is still running at a break-even or loss, or any update there?
I think, see, we've not disclosed unit-wise numbers, Gautam, but I think we can indicate that, you know, I think by this upcoming quarter, we would have turned the corner and it would be profitable. Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Keshav Kumar from Raksan Investors. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Sir, with a debt to equity of 0.13, looks like we've released a substantial amount of debt this quarter. And one of our peers has seen challenges in receivables, so I guess the inflation and cost of debt is leading to some pain over there due to clients deferring payments. So are we seeing or anticipating some impact in the near term, or as of now it's business as usual for us?
So if you look at how we have reduced debt in this quarter, kind of tells you the resilience of the underlying business. Working capital remains as it is as we gear up ourselves for Q4. So the short answer is we are not facing the challenges that others may be facing.
Sure, sir. And sir, lastly, on a medium to long term, so there's quite a bit which has happened in biopharma in the last 20 years, and the last 5 years we've seen AI impacting in a big way. So there is a lot of progress in proteomics, databases are being populated at an ever-increasing pace, ability to figure protein structure, finding potential new targets and so forth. So this should come as a beneficiary to both small molecules and peptides. But when we see the CDMO supply, they've traditionally been in short supply, and with lead times of 18 to 24 months, and the capacity can't be scaled exponentially to match the pace of drug discovery advances. So just pure empirically, we should see a much larger share of inquiry because we are a decently established player and also have the capability to do both peptides and small molecules. So is it too soon to sort of have any feelers yet, or are we seeing the intensity of early phase inquiries going up?
I think generally speaking, we have, I think as we have been executing more projects successfully in the CNS space, because it's a B2B space and a lot of recognition, brand recognition happens through, you know, professional networks, etc. I think we are seeing steady increase in terms of inquiries. And I think beyond that, you know, I think it's hard to correlate with the comments you had made about, you know, the general drug discovery landscape and what's happening over there. But I think we have been, you know, kind of seeing a healthy increase in terms of inquiries, and we've become a little bit more selective in terms of the kind of projects we want to work on. Sajeev, anything you want to add?
Yeah, so again, Keshav, the point that you make about the discovery, the timelines and all of that is valid, but I think if you've seen over the past, our focus has been more in terms of molecules, in terms of our BD approach is more around molecules in phase two onwards. And there, even as we are seeing more traction, I think it will take some more time for us, the impact from flowing through from preclinical to phase two to happen for it to show up in our purview. So I think to answer your broader question, that's where we are right now.
Sure. Thank you, sir. That's all from me. Thank you.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Sachin Jain, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, Suresh. Hi, Suchit. Congratulations on good set of numbers. My question is, as now business mix improving at desired level and probably the margin trajectory, you're sounding more confident. What is the sustainable ROE you guys building in?
So, if you broadly look at our ROC, we...
Mr. Jain, I'm sorry, can you mute your line, please? We are getting an echo.
Is it better?
Yeah, so we are targeting ROC. I think so there's an echo.
Sir, I've muted Mr. Jain's line now. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so we are targeting an ROC in the broad range of 17 to 20%, and that I think so is what we would kind of want to sustain at in that broad range.
Sure. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah. And my second question is basically, if you have to see the CMS business for next 3 to 5 years, can you give some color how you guys are seeing the scalability from here, basically?
I think it's definitely looking very exciting for us because the quality of the pipeline in the recent periods have been significantly better compared to what we used to have earlier. And I think in terms of the annual revenue per molecule or the margin profile for the molecule or the likelihood of the drug success, the therapeutic area, I think all on all the important parameters that you would assess an NCE, I think the pipeline has been better. And I think these molecules have also now started commercialization. So therefore, I think in many ways, you know, there's a lot of scope for growth and obviously a lot of excitement about the CMS pipeline. The revenue growth that will come, I think, will be evident in the coming, you know, couple of years. And it's hard to paint a picture around it because, you know, saying a percentage number, I think, could be misleading because it could be, you know, either way. But I think we've started to see, you know, commercialization. And again, as I mentioned, 2 molecules have already commercialized in the last 1 year. And we expect maybe another couple to commercialize. And each of these by themselves are, you know, fairly attractive. And cumulatively, it should be good. And most important thing I would like to underscore is that our pursuit of new projects continues. Our goal is to keep adding, you know, such opportunities to our pipeline. And not every opportunity will be a successful commercial contract, but I think we are continuing to add these and we are creating capacities to support that. So I think overall it's very exciting. I think next 3 to 5 years we should see, you know, a good, you know, healthy growth and, you know, profitability from the CMS business. And I think it complements very nicely with our GDS business. So I think we have a good package all in all. But I'm not really able to quantify things, unfortunately.
Thank you. We have a next question from the line of Kunal from Carnelian Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. I have just one question. What are our CAPEX plans for the next year, if at all any?
So broadly, you know, if you look at our trending, we spend around, we've been spending around 100 crores to build capability in our plants, and that would be taken as a trending that would continue. Having said that, if our large capital investments we have to do to grow our business, as and when it happens and we get board approval, we will surely inform you in our quarterly earnings call.
So basically, 100 crores would be maintenance kind of a capex, not capacity enhancing capex.
Yeah. I understand correctly. Yeah. So it's a combination of maintenance as well as upgrades, which kind of enables us to meet the capacities of, you know, a particular molecule which suddenly grew. So it's a combination of both, but you could take that as a broad indicator.
And maybe what I will add to Abhijit's comment is I think a lot of the business growth may also require capital expenditure, which, you know, I think will happen in tandem with the business contract or, you know, some certainty of business. So in some ways, I think beyond what Abhijit said, if we do, invest more, it will be perhaps because we see more growth in terms of some other scale-up opportunities. But I think what we have shared is currently what's on the radar.
Okay. It will be fair to assume it will be more on the CMS business side, if at all anything lined up.
Yeah, I think typically our strategy has been to add capital expenditure on the back of the CMS molecules. And since the capacity is fungible between GDS and CMS, we are also able to use the same capacities for the GDS business. But I think over the last few years, I don't think we have created capacity exclusively for GDS business.
Unit 3,
yeah. I think in Unit 3, to initiate Unit 3 operations, I think the initial capacity created was for GDS. But I think the capacity that we are creating now, if we are creating new capacity, it may be to accommodate the growth from these new CMS molecules. But irrespective, the capacity is fungible between GDS and CMS. And what we typically do is, you know, we look 2 years ahead and make sure that we have capacities in place.
Okay, fair enough. Just one question as an OIS, right? We just wanted to understand, as our gross margin keep varying because of the products mix change and because of, you know, the variances that we have in the CMS specialty businesses. So how did one look at the margin basically for these three businesses? I mean, the ranking is known, right? But still, what would be the kind of difference in the gross margins between these three segments? So as an investor to gauge as to how much gross margin can vary between the three business verticals depending on the content?
I think they can be, see, I think at a high level, the gross margins of the prime, the specialty and the CMS may be similar, Kunal. But I think what's very important for you to understand is that at a product level, there is a variation in gross margin product to product. In CMS or in specialty, we have products which have 80% gross margins. We also have products which have maybe 30-35% gross margins. And and how we do in a particular quarter is also a factor of how much of a particular product we have shipped. So, you know, I think it's hard to give you, you know, more granularity on how the gross margins will figure out. But I think what we are seeing is a good blend right now. And unless, you know, there's a crazy surge in raw materials or maybe, you know, big fluctuation in Forex, these margins are a reasonable baseline for now to take. But we don't really want to give you spell out margins of prime, specialty, and CMS separately, because that may also not be very accurate. Because then, you know, if we ship certain products in CMS, then that margin will change. And then you will wonder, you know, why is the margins of CMS different? So I think we'd rather keep the margins at aggregate level and just help you understand that, you know, these are broadly the reasonable margins to assume.
Okay, fair enough. The only reason for asking is if I look at the last 8 quarters, you know, the margins, the gross margins specifically has had wide variances. So just wanted to ask color, but fair enough. I understand what you're trying to say. Thank you. Wishing you all the best.
Thank you. We have a next question from the line of Sajal Kapoor, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the follow-up. Quick question on our R&D infrastructure. In terms of our R&D investments, is the current R&D setup in terms of campus size and capability as well as the scientific talent mix, is it good enough for next 2 years, or do you think we need a bigger R&D campus, or we need to significantly scale up from, you know, our current base of around 300 scientists?
I think today we are operating at about 360, 370 scientists, Sajal. But as you indicate, it is fairly tight because we do have, you know, we do use a lot of scientists for troubleshooting in the plant. We use them for life cycle management. We also have active GDS programs. And then we have the CMS business. So we are making some increases in R&D capacity in the upcoming financial year. And we think tactically that should suffice for the upcoming financial year. But maybe from a 2 to 3 year perspective, it may not be enough. So we're also looking at slightly medium term plans, which might involve some expansion of R&D. But at the same time, we're also looking at ways in which we can improve the effectiveness of R&D. That could be, you know, in terms of maybe, you know, putting certain systems in place, trying to also, you know, be better in selecting the kind of projects we want to take up in the organization. Maybe also trying to do more computer-aided experimentation to reduce, you know, the load on the bench. So I think there are a lot of important initiatives that are being taken up right now. I think studying pilot batches carefully using, you know, good modern techniques, using chemical engineering expertise is also a way to, you know, reduce your load on R&D labs. So I think it's an important question. I think we are, you know, in the midst of doing proper evaluation on what's good for doing process R&D. I think decisions to, you know, expand will be based on, you know, what we figure out in the next 6 months or so. But I think definitely as a growing company, we will have to make sure that, you know, R&D resources do not limit our ability to scale up more and more projects.
That's very reassuring. Thank you so much, Sarsh. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to management for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Yeah, I'd like to thank everyone for the engaging questions on the business. While we make every effort to answer your questions with the available clarity to us at this point of time, your questions also act as stimulants for our internal conversations. Even as we are excited about our business, it is important for us that our investors share that, and your participation today reflects that. And for that, we would like to thank you. Wish you all a good evening and look forward to talking again.
Thank you. On behalf of Newland Laboratories, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.